people will live longer and we die less.
We can't die less.
Oh, that's good news.
I'll have an extra beer at midnight summer eve. So what goes around, what comes around, we go around, right?
Exactly.
And so no, I agree. That's, it's a whole, the whole mind shift, shift, mind shift in mind.
Set shift.
Shit. Mind change.
Cut. Say that sentence again, please. Mind shit.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Way Ahead podcast. Today we're going to be talking about open innovation with our guest Niklas Nilsson from Leo Pharma. So when you say open data, what do you think? Because there's so many people think about open data, open science, open data, open access, open science, open source, open this, open that.
Yes.
There's many, many cool things, right? And I'm sure we all have different opinions of what they all mean.
Well, for me, I mean, the reason that, well, the thing that it triggers in me, open data, is basically that currently all the data that all devices are gathering is completely siloed. Somebody owns my data about my steps, somebody else owns it about my heartbeat, etc. So it's called completely separate tracks, and it's hard to learn something out of it if it's so separated. So I would like all of that data to be open, first of all to me, but actually anonymized also to everybody else, so that we can create sort of a large learning mechanism out of it. Because I mean, everybody, if everybody who ever went to the doctor, that data would be somehow collected and connected, then we could learn and predict a lot of diseases before they happen and help everybody live much, much longer and healthier.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I would like to see things go. And there are sort of steps going that way, but still early days.
Still early days, a great vision. I think many people share the vision, but right now it doesn't work due to practical reasons and current business models and so on.
Yes.
And people and people who are established in that kind of industry or field like to protect how they survive, right? So it's really hard to make something work differently when you're stuck with the old. Sometimes it's like, how do you change wheels on a car that is running? You can't, as like the healthcare system, right? We cannot stop the car from running because you can't say to a cancer patient, go home, come back in 2 years' time. We're rebuilding it from scratch. It doesn't work, right? Unfortunately. Well, yes, I know. But it needs to be done. We need to kind of have a green field, take it down and build it up from scratch. Then it will work the way we want it to work in 3 years, maybe, right? If you close it down for 2 years. But now we have to do it while it's running, then it's going to take 10, 15, 20 years to do it, if we can.
Can we do this in parallel? Because certain things you can't do in
parallel.
Yeah,
you can do it in parallel if you pay double the amount. So you need double the budget. And we all know that the budget of the healthcare system is growing exponentially. And soon we're going to hit the point where actually we can't pay for healthcare for everyone. That's a big problem in all Western countries.
I mean, the cost is growing.
The cost, healthcare cost.
But your budget is not, right?
No, unfortunately not. And we have a finite amount of money and budget we can use, right? But the cost...
I thought I heard budget is growing. I was like, that would sound good.
The budget is... Well, the request is growing, but the cost and the spendings are going, right? But soon we're going to realize we can't pay that much it's that is needed to actually provide healthcare to all people. In the US, it's a huge problem. I don't know about it. That's the country with the biggest percentage of GDP spent on healthcare. It's an enormous amount of money. And in Sweden, we're going in the same direction. It's going to be more and more costly. And someone's going to say, that's going to take a break. And we can't pay more to get the same healthcare that we kind of expect and used to. So we're going to have to do things differently, completely differently. Right now, we're just kicking the can down the road and saying, we'll fix that tomorrow, fix that tomorrow.
But I mean, things like new material discoveries are accelerating. We can change smaller things in a function and ecosystem, making the cost go lower, making the efficiency go up. For healthcare systems, for example, you don't have to go ahead and replace it one to one all by a sudden. You can fix some things before replacing the whole system. I guess that's how it's done today. But you say that costs go up and we're going to hit the point where we can't give the same healthcare to people that we do today. What things do you see could accelerate that?
I think you mentioned some good things here. You talk about tech advancement and things getting cheaper and more advanced. That's happening. Right now we're doing patchworks, right? We're fixing something here with a biosensor, we're fixing over here with a prosthetics, we're fixing over something over here with something else. But it's patchwork, and it's all kind of small solutions to the same system. What we do need is a rethink of how the system works itself. So one of the most powerful things today is business model innovation. And we don't really do that much. We kind of focus on technology solutions, that's going to do the thing. But it doesn't matter if you have 30 Fitbits attached to your arm. It will not provide a better medical treatment for you. It's how you use the data, right? So look at Netflix. Look at eBay, Alibaba, Lyft, Uber, and many more, right? They have provided a completely different business model and changed the entire ecosystem in the industry without actually using any kind of technology. So that's relevant. That is the big fundamental change. So the most powerful innovation today is actually business model innovation.
Mm.
And we're not really kind of perhaps acknowledging the fact that that is how we need to do things also from healthcare and research and pharma perspective.
A company, let's take Uber because it's
well known.
It's so easy to think of. Uber is compared with car companies, right? They at some point said Uber is not a car company, it's a software company. It's a shift in how you build your business model. So you can operate within any type of industry, but you need technology and software to support that.
Yeah.
So and that's the driver here.
Yeah. But if you had Uber software by itself, it wouldn't make a difference. It would you require a completely different business model and change the mindset and culture change. And we've been building for many decades, you know, incremental innovation. We do what we do a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, and all the news is pretty much right. But nothing big, radical change is gonna come from that. So and but how to kind of make those big changes happen more easily? That's a big question. I think maybe that's what we had today. But that's to kind of point out that looking at technology advancement is good, but it's not gonna change the world by itself. It's the culture and mindset of people using that and applying it in different ways in business models. That's gonna save the world. From my perspective, working with open innovation in the pharma industry and research on how to make that happen differently, I can see and I have my personal prediction of what's going to happen. Because if you look at the pharma industry and research and healthcare from within its own bubble, you have restrictions on how you see things going to happen. But if you look at that from the outset, from the rest of the world, if you take into consideration Uber, right, or how the rest of the world has changed or is changing, then you realize all those change pressures, they are also pushing on the pharma industry. But the pharma industry has been looking at itself, you know, from within its walls, therefore can't really see how they're going to change because they're unaware of the external change pressure and what's happening to the world. But the world around them will change all to the pharma industry. Perhaps it's a little bit slower because we've got some big fat walls, really expensive walls as well, to protect the business model. But in the pharma industry right now, the traditional pharma company develops research, keeps it secret, and produces a treatment for a specific indication or treat disease, right? If you take my predictions, they're starting to realize now that their core business and why they're put in the world is not to kind of push a technology into a treatment, it's to understand what kind of treatment is needed from a patient perspective. So the pharma industry is going to be a lot more customer focused, because if you look at the rest of the world, what is changing in a good way is customer focus, right? You understand what the customer needs and you provide that. So the pharma industry will change into being customer patient focused much, much more than now. And therefore, they cannot at the same time remain technology and science focused. So we can see the change we're seeing now is the biotechs are going to take more care of the technology, the early science research based, and the pharma kind of towards the patients going to take care of the patient needs, the understanding of the disease, understanding the burdens of living with disease, and having more holistic kind of treatment understanding. I can't just give you a pill and you'll be happy. I might give you an app, a pill, a psychological course, or you know, a resort or something, right, that you make you feel better, not just a pill. Because healthcare isn't about just, or research and pharma isn't just about providing a treatment. It's to provide a better life, a quality life. And that is so much more than just giving a treatment. I think that's a shift we're going to see. For sure.
Yeah.
And that means that the research is going to have to be picked up by someone else. Remember what I talked about, technology itself isn't the solution, and access to that kind of data isn't the solution either. It's what you do about it and what you can do about it, right? And also we have to at the same time respect the individual the individual's ownership of that kind of data, which is a big thing. So there's some kind of hiccups and difficulties in a way, but if you grasp the content, what you say, of getting access to more data on a personal level, maps your genome and your proteomics and how you work and so on and so on, is a good start to better understand how we are different as individuals. Because right now we've been treating everyone as the same. If you have a red spot on your shoulder and another person has a similar red spot on your shoulder, you have the same disease. Because it's symptom-based, right?
Mm.
But the underlying mechanisms is often very different. So if I give you the same treatment based on symptoms, it will work for you, but not for you.
Yeah.
And actually the efficacy and how well a medicine works in individuals is pretty bad. I mean, and actually, we as patients, we're all patients, we accept it. We go to the doctor, we say, well, I have this cough, take this pill, and we'll see if it works. And you accept that, right?
Mm.
Take the same thing. You take your motorbike. Oh, the brakes stop working. I better take it to the shop. You go to the shop, they say, yeah, I think we might have fixed it. You know, go for a run tomorrow and come back and tell me how if it worked or not. You would never accept that.
No, of course not.
Of course not. But we do it with the pharma industry and that kind of medical treatment because that's how it is and we don't know better. But that's gonna change in the future. We as patients are not going to stand and say we accept that it might work. If you say, take this pill, you're going to say, why? Why should I take this pill? And there should be an answer to that question. I think it's only fair. They should say, well, based on your genome sequence, we can see that you have this enzyme present, so it should work on you. And you have this enzyme present, so that you actually should make sure that the metabolism of the drug will be good, so you won't have a bad side effects. Oh, that makes sense, I'll try it. And you will not have, shouldn't take it, because you lack the specific genome mutation, right, that will make it work on you.
Exactly.
And that kind of information, we can only kind of get into research if we have access to that kind of information on a broad level. So coming back to the open data. So it might not be to kind of just leech the human population on information so we can make money from it. It's actually to make treatments work better the way they should work, actually.
Mm.
But from a user perspective, a patient perspective, you can't give that kind of information up only to one company, right? It should be an open data, an open source that available to everyone.
Exactly.
Then it will be non-competitive and it will benefit everyone. And that's the way we should go forward.
I guess that's where you can get a sort of this sidetrack maybe happening where small but continuous development happens on a track that actually is driven by people wanting to solve their own problems. But because we're living in an age where sort of you can actually have access to laboratories and and research and data more and more, then you can have sort of a movement that is
yes.
not as powerful, obviously, as Big Pharma, but is running aside.
Not yet.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good point, and I lead into a discussion we also talked about before, the democratization
mm-hmm.
side, right? So
exactly.
What only very well-educated, highly financed specialists could do in a lab can soon be done by anyone. Also yourself at home, actually. And looking at the analogy to the IT in the software, right? We have the big companies being started in garages, right? 20, 30 years ago. Some pretty big ones now, Amazon, Microsoft, and HP and Apple and so on.
Yes.
And they could do that because all of a sudden the technology was available for them at home. And we're starting to see the same change in biotechnology. You don't need a $1 million laboratory to do it. You perhaps just need $1,000 on a credit card. Then you can do it yourself, or you can purchase printing equipment, and data is available, right? Knowledge is available. You can pretty much find everything in Google, right? And it's at least a good representation of what we know.
Mm.
But soon, everything that used to be specific to some industry is going to be available to everyone. And we're going to see some big forces come into play when that happens. And when we say grassroots perspective today, you say it and some people scoff, right? High grassroots, what did I know? That can't really make a big difference. But that's going to change. They will make a big difference because they're going to have the powers, they're going to have the numbers. And they're going to have politics as well, right? So we're going to see that the impact of grassroots movement is going to be bigger and on change. And that change is going to impact how the pharma industry works. So they're going to have to work hand in hand with those. So again, that's going to come back more to have a need-based pharma research kind of organization than a purely financial organization.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another, perhaps, outlook for the future.
I guess there are more obstacles as well. I mean, distributing pharma, for example, you need to go to see a doctor, and the doctor says, hey, here's your prescription. Maybe it works, maybe it won't. Do you see it's possible that we actually can create that ourselves?
Download and 3D print the drug, you mean, or what?
Yeah, whatever technology is available at that time, I don't know.
But 3D printing your medication is possible. But 3D printing is just one way of achieving a personalized dosage, perhaps, of medication. That again comes down to understanding why you should have something that might be different from a neighbor, even though you have the same symptom, but not even the same disease. So understanding what treatment you should have, again, come back to personalization and precision medicine, is going to really change how we distribute and what drugs are being given. But the whole system that you go to the physician and they tell you what to do is slowly changing. I mean, if we think about what happened 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, you went to the doctor and he said, this is how it is. And you said, okay. Now you go and you say, well, I read on the net that this might not be the case. And we're making life difficult for physicians because we don't trust them. and maybe that the solution would be more a discussion, a dialogue based on your understanding and your needs and the physician's understanding, right? But that will require a much more time spent per patient, per doctor, than we have today. And looking at today, we need the opposite because we have fewer resources available for actually patients, right? Luckily, although in Sweden and the Western countries, we still have quite a bit. If you compare it to other countries like China, they see 2,000 patients per day in this Ukraine on a conveyor belt, and
so
there's no communication.
So this is where AI and digital platforms come in handy.
Yes,
that's what I was gonna say. This sounds like we need that solution like that happened to chess, where they created the centaurs, which is basically the machine and the guy together beating both machines and guys. Because together they're much more powerful. One can parse a lot more data, the other one can make better decisions.
Yep.
And together.
Yes, oh, you're right. No, and this is happening today as well.
Mm.
And I would say that the technology exists. Mm. Again, we have the advancement in technology, but we don't have the system to deal with it. We don't have the change in mindset also and the culture to accept this. Should I take this drug? Because the computer told me.
That's scary.
And who's going to be responsible for that, right? We say the same. We see the same kind of discussion with insurance and self-driving cars, right? Who is going to be legal responsible if a self-driving car hits you? Is it the driver who's not actually driving, or is it the car who doesn't have a driver, or is it the one that actually proves a software system, or is it the one who owns the car? You don't really know, right? It's a completely different discussion. Same thing is going to be in healthcare. And healthcare change is slower, right? So you're going to be lagging behind. But AI for sure is going to make a difference in understanding huge data sets. So understanding it, looking at your collective input, such as how often do we exercise, what kind of exercise, what's your genome, what did you eat, what didn't you eat, what medication have you taken previously, what's the UV light today affecting your skin, all these things are going to be too much for a human being to kind of consider.
Yeah.
And AI can gather all those big data clouds and overlap and then conclude something and say, based on all this, you should probably take this. And that's going to be a little bit like us saying with intuition, oh, it feels like you're going to do this, because there's so much input, right? We can't rationally say what it is, but we kind of feel by intuition that this is the right thing.
Mm.
But a computer, an AI, can do that.
Yeah.
And it can do that today. But we're not ready to implement that as a serious alternative in how to treat yet.
Mm.
It's not a decision, it's a guideline, and then still the human is going to have to do the same thing. In a way, we're doing parallel things, right? But in the future, you're going to see that more, perhaps, belief is going to put into that automated system. So much of the standard treatments is going to be recognized. And that's going to be handled by an automated process much faster. And maybe then the physician can spend more time on the really strange cases, hopefully. And more perhaps on the bedside manner, actually interacting with people.
Exactly.
Instead. So maybe the role of the physician will change greatly. And actually, also, we're going to see much more telemedicine. Telemedicine is kind of remote medicine, remote consultation. Because you don't always have to go to see a doctor.
No.
And it's really, really complicated. If you look at how much money the society spends, you taking one day off, not producing a work, go to see someone else, that costs a lot of money, and the whole system around that, seeing a doctor, it costs a lot. what if you could just, you know, you can phone them today. Yeah, that's a big difference. But you can now phone someone and get a quick consultation. That works. But if you can send a picture of something, right, and get an instant feedback, or even an AI can say, well, based on your picture and the data we have from you, you should come in or you shouldn't come in or you should do this, right?
Yeah.
So telemedicine is going to help us perhaps reduce the cost on the standard healthcare needs that most of us have, so we can focus on the really serious ones. And also it's going to perhaps be able to give healthcare treatments and help assistance to third world patients who don't have a doctor or physician that perhaps lives 100,000 k away.
I've seen this experiment in India that basically they had this AI could actually talk to patients coming in with their children and ask questions and get answers and have a discussion before even or avoiding seeing a doctor.
Okay.
And just answer general questions, and you could actually like shift focus on, do I have to ask this from the mother or
yes.
from the child? Whose input do I need for each question? It's really quite amazing development.
and again, we have the technology for that.
Exactly.
But we don't have the society at that level to accept those kind of solutions yet.
And this is one of those cases where actually third world might beat us because they don't have the existing system that we have.
Exactly.
And therefore, they have a chance to try these new things. And then once it's accepted there, then it will bubble back up and come over here. And
they don't have the same old core that we have to fix on the way.
Exactly.
The same thing goes with banking, right, in Africa.
Definitely.
Mobile banking, everyone has a mobile phone. That's how I do banking nowadays.
First landlines, they never had them.
Nope, I never had
that. Dial-up modems, never had them. Old school banking, never had them.
Yeah, things are definitely going to explode in the third world when connectivity hits and becoming a standard. Amount of people, skilled people, that can't express themselves today because they don't have the means to it. They will have the means tomorrow and will bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And that expertise is hidden for everyone else today.
I would say maybe not yet expertise, but the possibility of expertise.
The potential, yes.
Potential, yeah.
Because we will have own education, we'll have everything available, so they can take that kind of PhD online at home, right? For much cheaper than we can do now. And then they have the tools and the digital connectivity to do the same thing that we can do now, yeah. But I think, again, the big problem here is for us who are established, how do we deal with this? And how do you create an interface reaching out to utilize that opportunity instead of pushing it away? Because that's the kind of standard action nowadays, at least for big companies. The best way to predict the future is to create the future.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're going to do here, right? So learn about how it works, and then you can create your own future. You don't just stand by it and see how it's happening by itself. Because it's not. It's us making it happen right now. I mean, someone also said about this, I mean, they compared, I mean, a very, very important person in the past that people would listen to, right? A president, right? But you can have the same Twitter account as the president, right?
Exactly.
So there's no difference in the tools we have to reach out to the world.
And it's true the other way around too, though. No president had access to all the world's music and knowledge 100 years ago.
No, that's
yet
true.
I do, just like the president.
Yeah. You're just like the president.
Totally. Although I prefer to compare myself to Iron Man.
I'll call you Tony.
Because today, I mean, you can go ahead and buy random stuff and start building crazy things in your garage.
You can. I'm actually a bit surprised that not more people do it.
Yeah.
The same thing happens. The same thing applies to biotech.
Exactly.
And medicine, right? We just, not that quite yet. IT, software, yes. But now we're seeing this whole thing with open source electronics, right? And the cheap micropresses, Raspberry Pi, Arduino, and it's a whole bunch of those now, right?
Exactly.
And you can build anything, and you can connect it anyway. But still, I'm not really happy about this, the rather low impact it has on society. I mean, you have, you know, your funky YouTube channels, and you have people doing it, but it's still just a few. But I think that's of course a slower transformation process. But it's exciting. You can do pretty much anything. But people don't realize, you think.
You occasionally see something that actually makes it to the media. But we're distracted by too much other things, right?
Yes.
There are things happening. If somebody focuses
Facebook
on
Facebook timeline.
Well, yeah. And you know, the terrible news addictions and availability bias and all those things that make us not notice that there's good things going on.
But that's also one thing I thought about, because still when someone says, you know, you just buy this Arduino board and anyone can do it. But then you realize not everyone can do it, because you first had to be a computer software specialist to actually install the thing on the computer, right?
Luckily, that's changing, though.
It is changing. That is
changing,
but maybe that we don't see it.
Microbit
is a good change to plug it in, but that's different Microsoft as well, right?
Hmm?
That's
BBC.
No, that's BBC's. That's right. That's BBC's. And they sent, it was 1 million of those cards to all the schools in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very cheap processor. You plug it into USB, and it's open source software to program electronics to make a difference. Because nowadays, the step between a computer and the real world has been huge, right? But now we can actually make something on a little computer or circuit board.
Exactly.
And that's pretty cool. That is a good analogy of what's also going to happen in pharma research.
Hmm.
Because we're going to eventually have the same kind of tools, open source interfaces, just plug and play, and you can make the same thing happen on a molecule or a peptide or a cell line, right? That you see right now in electronics. It's actually fusing biology and changing it into something else is going to be huge. So right now, most of the research in the pharma and medicine is based on a molecule, right? A molecular thing that you eat and then it has an effect. But changing how bacteria or biology works and then have an effect on body is going to be perhaps even bigger.
Hmm.
And also for society in general, how it can actually change biology. And this is what is called synthetic biology. So we're kind of reprogramming biology to do something else.
Mm.
And this is going to be pretty cool. And that's happening right now in the DIY labs, in the garage, because they have the tools to do this. They have the beans are changing the genome sequence of bacteria and making it do something else. Right now, it's the tools and the kind of the biobricks, that's actually a whole foundation called biobricks that does this, is rather simple. Maybe they can have, I can introduce a sensor, maybe, you know, a pH sensor gene into bacteria, and then maybe I can attach an enzyme function, something else. So you could do very, very simple things that perhaps doesn't have a real impact in real life now, but it's just the beginning.
Exactly.
And when you can transform genes in a bacteria into Lego thinking. You take, you know, a 1 2x4 yellow and then the 3 green and then a blue one on top, and all of a sudden you got something that eats oil, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be some serious risks with that. Biological warfare and your personalized virus and other things. And as with all technology, there's going to be some potential of abusing technology.
Oh.
But I think history shows that you can't suppress it. It's going to happen if it can happen. So I think the best way to deal with those things is probably by education. One example is open source incident. It's another kind of citizen science driven research project that say we need to produce insulin much cheaper. So people who have diabetes need to control the glucose levels by using insulin. But it's really, really expensive to buy insulin, because it's really, really expensive to produce insulin, and it's being controlled by the market. So they're really trying to make an open source protocol on how to produce insulin. And when they crack that one, it's going to reduce the cost of insulin production significantly. And you're going to see some big change to the companies who survive mainly nowadays on selling insulin, for sure. But it doesn't work within the common regulations and operations and so on. So it doesn't work in society right now, but no doubt it's going to change.
Mm.
And then it's going to have some big impact. So people who do these things by themselves because they can nowadays, it's going to change the world.
Yeah.
For sure. And they do it because they can. And they do it because it's fun. They don't do it because they want to please some investors.
No, exactly. They want to solve something that either they have or they know someone who has. And
yes.
It's personal. It's
personal,
really motivated.
And it's driven by passion and interest. And that is the most powerful force.
Yeah.
Much more so than economy. That's going to be pretty exciting. So what we're doing in industry, what I'm trying to do in industry, is try to how can we connect to those movements? How can we not stand aside and kind of try to prevent them from happening, but actually say, reaching our hand, say, hey, take our hand. We can give you tools. We can give you incentives. We can give you means. We can give you goals that you can work on instead of kind of pushing them away. So that's something I at least try to do.
Mm-hmm.
Also including BNIF, actually, in Stockholm.
Thanks
so much.
It's a great discussion to have, so thank you for
having
those with me.